Understanding words is what you really need to start doing. You need to start doing your homework and understanding words. If you put an S in front of words, it becomes swords. And that's what words are. They're cutting. They can cause you great trouble. Humans are word control creatures. So we need to establish what words mean.
Welcome, friends. This is the One Great Work Warriors. We're back for another hard-hitting episode. We've been dreaming up for the past 3 weeks and challenging one another with our grammar to prepare for this rhetoric. And we're going through our trivium process, considering different possibilities. What could possibly be the things that are holding people back from understanding, discovering natural law, and speaking about it publicly so that the human race doesn't have to keep going through this slavery cycle over and over and over? You know, we're ready to move on, folks. So we got to kind of expand our minds. So here with the One Great Work Warriors, we're constantly looking for topics to help pry open the minds of the public and those who might be curious enough to hear our words. And that is the topic for tonight, is words. We're going to toss around some of these things and feel the weight and the power of them together, and meditate and concentrate a little bit right now on these things that come out of our mouth that can inflict so much damage and that have the potential to change the world for the better. So I'm going to pass it on to my man Brandon, who was actually one of our top wordsmith powerhouses here, and see what he has to say about words, etymology, and clarity.
Thank you for that. I wouldn't call myself a wordsmith yet. Still got a couple more decades of study. But, you know, when we think of words, words create thoughts. They can create beliefs in our mind. They can create concepts. They can create emotions. They can create actions, you know, in our thought forms, and they can create, you know, actions. So we should be conscious of the words that we use, and we should choose our words wisely, and we should become conscious, you know, speakers. I was listening to Manly P. Hall, a lecture earlier today, and he said, our mouth is connected to our mind, and the words that we speak would be reflective of how we think. And I will also say the words that we use would be reflective of our consciousness. So the understanding of words at their root level is key, because that root definition in the form of etymology is going to connect that word, which is a symbol, to something in reality. So the importance of etymology and having a correct definition of the words that we use is key when it comes to understanding ourselves, when it comes to understanding reality, and also communicating things. So let's look at some of the etymology when we are talking about words, because when we are using language and speech and words and rhetoric, we should be trying to bring some form of clarity to something. So the etymology of the word clear means giving light, morally pure, something that is bright, something that is luminous, because if something is clear, then the light can shine through it. And light was always associated with knowledge, goodness, you know, higher states of consciousness, you know, how natural law, true teachings, right action. So light was always synonymous, associated with symbolic of higher states of consciousness. So when we look at the word, you know, definition, because, you know, we all should be defining our terms, as the great Jordan Maxwell would always say, define your terms. The etymology of the word, you know, definition means the setting of boundaries. You are putting limitations on something to say, hey, this is what this thing is, and this is what it is not. So having a correct definition of words is key, because without those definitions, then you would just have pretty much a relativistic, you know, society, or a relativistic, you know, reality. So when we put these definitions on words, we are saying, hey, this mouse, you know, is this thing. It's not a car. It's not a pencil. It's not a piece of paper. You know, so when we define that, we're saying, hey, this is what this thing is. This is the form of it. Because if something doesn't have any form, it doesn't have any shape. If it doesn't have any shape, it doesn't have any boundaries. So when we look at the word meaning, what does it mean to mean something? We're talking about expression or something that is symbolized. It means to intend, to convey. And if something doesn't have meaning, it lacks what? It lacks value. So we need to be clear in our rhetoric. We need to be clear in our language. We need to be clear in our speech. We need to have a correct understanding of the definition of words, and we need to understand the meaning within those words. So when we define our terms, that creates a common ground when it comes to understanding. I'm sure we've all been in a particular conversation, and we are talking about a particular thing, and there's this semantical misunderstanding, as Chris Nelson calls it, because someone has their incorrect definition of words, and you may have a correct definition of words. So when it comes to trying to reach this common ground, it's much harder, because that incorrect definition in their mind has created a incorrect concept. Then therefore, you can't reach this common ground without that, you know, clarity, without that meaning, without that definition. So anyone who is saying that the definition of words are not important is a fool, and they lack understanding of symbolic representation in reality. And this is the very reason why we are enslaved, is because we haven't been taught the correct definition. And as we grow up, you know, we hear these words being used and we just repeat these words, but we don't really grasp the essence within the word. We don't really grasp the definition. We don't really look at the meaning. You know, we don't look at the etymology. We don't look at, you know, the context and how it's being used. We don't look at how the word has been developed, you know, like over time. So the definition of words, the correct definition of words, therefore we buy into correct ideas and correct concepts. And when we have the incorrect definitions of words, because like I said earlier, words create thoughts, words create beliefs, words create concepts within our mind. So if those definitions are incorrect, that's going to create incorrect thoughts, incorrect axioms, incorrect beliefs. And that's where the distortion comes from. You know, so the truth is not about distortions. The truth is not about contortions or manipulation. So without these definitions, without these boundaries, we would just have a world with no form. And in a world with no form, we can just make shit up as we go. We can just make things up based on feeling, you know, based on how it appeals toward us. And then sadly, we would be in the world of chaos, or this kind of postmodernistic world that they have constructed. And we see, you know, saying, oh, well, you can just change the definition of words. Well, are you obfuscating things? Are you trying to twist and distort things? And that's my whole thing, is can you really change the definition of a word if that definition had already limited that word and was symbolic of something in reality? Can that really be done? So I'll pass it on to Derek.
Cheers, Brandon. Yeah, thanks so much for kicking that off. I really appreciate that. And tailing off the last thing you said, I mean, like, people are hung up on the basic things that are just inherent in nature, as far as, you know, the seventh cosmic law principle of gender. Like, people can't even answer a simple question nowadays, like, what is a woman? Like, are we fucking kidding me? Like, that's the divine feminine gatekeeper, you know, birth-giving life form in this reality. Hello? Like, so whatever. But yeah, let's get back to basics, because hey, ¿qué onda? ¿Cómo estás? Mucho trabajo. Y la plan monde on se place là, les gars. Et je suis content. Very happy to have you guys here. We got, you know, Jerry from Mexico. I'm in France, and Rick in Canada, and the rest in the States. And that's great. And yeah, I've had an interesting background. I'm not going to go over that really, but just speaking French I mean, I took that in middle school and high school a little bit, just to pass, you know, the minimal requirements, right? Like a lot of people took Spanish, and a lot of people are like, you know, why do we got to learn this stuff, right? It's a shame that, you know, there were certain angles that weren't emphasized as to how this can enrich your life and stimulate brain activity. And I swear, like, once you're bilingual, it just, there's something magical happens in there. But to go back to etymology, because, you know, our language is constructed, you know, with Germanic, Latin, and Greek. And the word etymology, let's break it down, right? E-T-Y-M, etym, means true. It's from the Greek word etymos. And, you know, ology is the study of, you know, the word from logos, right? The word, thought, explanation, that kind of stuff. So etymology, the study of whatever, right? So I know we're all down with the philosophia, monomia, like the love for knowledge. And taking it back to that divine feminine goddess Sophia. But anyways, language has been something I've always been interested in, and playing with words ever since I could remember. And, you know, like finding it really funny to break down the syllabics and phonetics of things. And even when I was like half illiterate, whatever, growing up, you know, like grade school, elementary, whatever. And, yeah, that just carries on. And, you know, listening to music, especially, you know, where I was from, Bay Area, I mean, aside from music, I mean, just like slam poetry and like haikus and like all these open mics that I went to. It was just such a wealthy place to be. It felt, you know, just like being in that moment and hearing people express their words, you know, through whatever spectacular vernacular that could be voluptuous or more, you know, cut and dry, whatever, right? And, because it's easy for people to kind of misinterpret, you know, what people are saying, no matter how clear people can articulate these things. And going back to what Brandon says, like, yeah, people have like a different idea or definition or meaning in their head about specific words or, you know, phrases of words. And a lot of times context needs to be, you know, really taken into mind when we have conversations, when we're listening to things and all and everything. Because, yeah, there's a gazillion podcasts out there with a lot of people, you know, with a Dunning-Kruger effect, you know, tossing up word salads, you know, a little bit too much, you know. It's not always a bon appetit as far as soul food is concerned, but, you know, whatever. So, geez, I lost my train of thought for a second there, but I'm going to pass it off after I just mentioned real quick that, yeah, just learning French, it helped me out so much because, yeah, like having that, you know, Latin-based language and how it ties into so many words in English. Yeah, I kind of racked my brain, like, going way too much French and kind of lost sight of some of my English, that, you know, years ago, which is kind of funny, right, and ironic. But at the same time, it did kind of help me understand words and meanings on a deeper level, and being able to make connections to things and even, like, formulating little rhyme schemes or whatever my little spiel is sometimes with that. It's just a... Yeah, it's like, oh, we're not here to fucking nerd out on, you know, language and words. No, it's like actually pretty important. And especially for those trying to produce content and, or whether it be through videos or write articles or do your essays, whether it be just, you know, writing them, putting them on Substack or, you know, having video essays to that, we want to have our words razor sharp so people can really, understand it, have them understand it at the, you know, best possibility, I guess, if you will, for lack of a better explanation. And that's why we're here, because we're trying to sharpen our swords, you know, S words, you know, like take the S off of, you know, the sword, and you have words. And we got to understand that language is the battlefield, and the dark occultists have, you know, done this for eons. And so, it's been quite a humbling path for me, like just having to listen so much and being corrected all the time through, you know, my learning experience being over here in France, and not really wasn't up to snuff from the get-go, of course, you know. I've been out here since like 2008, so it's been a long time coming. And c'est la vie, les amis, in place to be. So what's good, my man Jerry?
Yo, what up, yo? It was great what you said. I've been taking notes, and I was going to save this till the end, but I just want to share. Yes, I am bilingual. I learned Spanish as a kid from my grandmother, and it helped me a lot. I was about 8 years old when I moved to Mexico, and I was placed in the classroom of Mexicans, and I only knew one word, which was what? What? And that's how I learned Spanish, just by asking what? What does that mean? So funny how like that came to be. And later on, after high school, when I was in high school, I really barely passed English. It seemed like hard work, and I was dreading it. I passed, you know, because I guess I would pay attention to class, so that's how I made it through. But I never really sharpened my skills, which you touched on, Derek, the importance of it. Super important to know your words, the definitions of words, like the back of your hand. And it's easier to express yourself once you know these words. You get a better picture of the world. And that's what we're going to talk about, is the importance of definition, right? We use definitions to understand our reality. But what I wanted to talk about was the literary importance. So I'm going to read a little bit from this slide from Brandon Martin's Green Language presentation from Funnel 2. Literature is of crucial importance to those who wish to bring more collective awareness and help evolve humanity into a higher state. That's all I'm going to read. Read, guys. We have to read. But reading is how we become free, how we understand words, sharpen our words, because they're spells. And this brings me to the last roundtable discussion we had, where Brandon talked about white wizardry. So we want to use our words for good. And what I'll be touching on during this roundtable discussion is nothing new. It's nothing that hasn't been said yet. So how did I get here, really quick? I looked up natural law because I didn't understand the meaning of those words. And now, fast forward, I'm here doing a roundtable discussion with the One Great Work Warriors. So I really just encourage you to ask questions. If you don't know something, don't act like you know it. Like, it's okay to say, I don't know. You know, write it down, look it up. That's what I've been doing lately, is if I don't understand something, I'm going to ask. Like, for example, you, Derek, you said something about Slavics. Is that what you said?
Oh, syllabics. You know, like, especially, you know, multi-syllable stuff, and seeing how things kind of rhyme together and kind of match up, correlate, and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. How do you spell that?
Like syllable, S-Y-L.
Okay. See, that's the context, because now I get the context and I can understand what he's saying. Without that, I can just make shit up in my mind, and that's fucking like relativism. And then, you know, how I said, how do you spell that? Because it's a spell, right? It's like we have to consider that, be conscious of our words, like Brandon said. So I got here by looking up natural law. The rest is history. All right, so I'm just going to get into a few, you know, I'm going to answer some questions. Why is definition important? A definition has the potential to provide clarity. At their best, definitions act like a compass, providing a loss reader with several potential directions from which to proceed, or listeners. And then I want to say, you can understand a definition or the meaning of a word by using hypothesis. For example, we can describe natural law by describing it as it is not the law of the jungle. So, and then Brandon said that can words really change their meaning? And it's funny because words have changed their meaning over time. They've kind of evolved. And yeah, I just want to say there's like a history to it. But it makes me wonder how like some words have different meanings, like right, I guess. I guess you just have to know the context of it. But that's like the importance of the etymology, to go back to its origins. And let's see, words are not just what the dictionary says. So just reinforcing, please read etymology. It'll really, you know, empower you. And then Brandon Martin said, anarchy has been obfuscated to make it look like chaos. And it's like, if we don't understand the meaning of these words, we're going to think it's something completely different. Anarchy just means without rulers. And then there you can touch on the definition of a woman. It's crazy. I think there was like a film released, and it was about a spelling contest, and the kid asked, well, he was asked to spell woman, and he asked, what does it mean? And they couldn't give him an answer. They were like frightened. So it's like, guys, we got to get on the same page, not be talking semantics. We need that knowledge. I'm going to pass it to Crip Rick.
Passing it to me. That's awesome, guys. And you guys make great points, man. This one, I'm going to try to look more at the camera for everyone. It's hard on my neck, but I'm going to do my best and look at my notes. But you guys make great points. And this was a topic that I spent a lot of time thinking about, and I kind of went all over the place. And I was kind of telling the Warriors that before we started recording, like I thought it was going to be a simple thing to talk about language and words. And then I kind of found myself going all over. I kind of went all down these different paths, and it was really a cool exercise in doing that. But I kind of had to pull myself back, because it was just going all over the place. And so I tried to simplify it. I even simplified it to the point where I was like, it fascinates me, like how language even began, you know, like way back when the argument, maybe it started with grunting and pointing and gestures and body language, and then turned into probably pictures. I don't know, maybe pictures. And then, you know, you take these pictures and you start making sounds and putting meaning to them. And that kind of fascinated me. I just thought, like, you know, how it even started. That's how far I went back. And then, you know, which then would eventually move on to symbology and all the things that I like to talk about. And you guys make great points, because I talk about a lot on my show that you're seeing the meaning of words changing. Their meanings and definitions are changing right in front of us. They're slowly doing it. And that's scary to me, because that's the problem, is that they're actually doing this. And you guys made great examples of that. And now you have the point where people can't even answer a simple question about a word. Like, you have a great big argument going back and forth. And that's what is interesting. And so there definitely needs to be an effort on clearly defining words and their use and understanding them. Because the one thing I do know is that words are powerful. I mean, think about it. They can invoke feelings. They can invoke thought. They can incite a reaction, either for good or bad, just by words. So that, to me, that's so powerful. And that's the thing, is that's the danger too, is that if you don't have a good understanding of words and their meanings, then they can be used against you. so they can be used to control and manipulate if you're not educated. I think for one example, I can think of the law, like they use this language. If you don't understand that's how they slip by a lot of things, is that they count on people not understanding half the meaning of the meaning to half of the words or any of the things that go along with that. So that's why I think it's so important that we educate ourselves on words and their meanings. And so that's kind of where I was at with this. It was really cool sitting and thinking about it and just language. We use it every day. We use it every day in one form or another. And it's really, I think it's a great thing to think about. And then I kind of thought, which was kind of neat, I'm looking at my notes, I was thinking of a counter argument, and then I kind of realized this as I was looking at it, that this argument was kind of where my mind went. When I think of words as themselves, to me, God, this is so hard to explain that I hope it makes sense, but words themselves don't have a meaning on their own, like the word itself. To me, people assign a meaning to any given word, and then it's kind of agreed upon by society. And this is just a counter argument. So you guys can tear it down. You guys can add in. But that's where I'm kind of at. That's where it went with my thoughts, is that, you know, society gives meaning to these words and it's agreed upon. But what happens when everybody has a different idea of what a word means, which I think what is happening? And I kind of have examples. So you have the word anarchy. We talk about it. We talk about rights. We talk about morality. We talk about ethics. And I guarantee you, you can go and ask 100 random different people. Just go out in the public, 100 random people, and ask them to, you know, the meaning or the definition of these words that I just said. And I would guarantee that you're probably going to get close to 100 different answers. And what's interesting, that's my point, is that words have very different meanings to each person in many cases, and that's the problem. So it's really important, and I find myself doing that, like you guys were saying. I go back and look at words, and I love doing that. I love going back and finding out the root, what the meaning of this word is and how it's meant to be used, and I do that a lot now. But it's interesting. So that's kind of my counter argument to what you guys are talking about, like that words themselves we're assigning meaning to them. And this is the problem, is if we're all assigning different meanings, what do you have? You have what we're talking about, in my opinion.
Yeah, confusion.
Confusion. Yeah. So, yeah, you guys can add in. That's my thoughts and my counter argument that I wrote down. So whoever wants to tackle that one, all to you.
Chris, did you want to say something? All right, Jim, you can go.
Yeah, that's cool. The confusion part, that's definitely a big factor. So, like, when it comes to etymology, I never really knew the word until I started hanging out with you guys, a little bit here and there from Mark Passio and that. But one of our early meetings that we started, I think Chris, maybe it was the first meeting or the second meeting. It's like, let's look it up on Edom Online. And so that was like my introduction to that website. And then, it's been like a discovery process. I use it from time to time. So, but it's all definitely new to me. Almost 50 years old, like that's not something that any of my friends ever referred to, or my parents or anyone else I knew growing up was like, oh, what's the origin of the word, But it's cool. Like everything you guys have been saying, you get to realize it's important to understand the original intention of the word. And, you guys mentioned anarchy a couple times, and that's one word that, you could look it up. And the original intention, it means without rulers. Like an means without, and archos means rulers. So it's like it was intended in a positive way, to imagine what kind of world we could live in without believing in the legitimacy of rulership over you. But then if you go Google anarchy or any do any search on it, you're going to see right away that it means chaos. Like to live in a world without government would lead to, you know, that's what we've been indoctrinated to believe. So that's an example of one of the most common ones we use, how a word has been distorted and creates that confusion. But that's why it is cool to like go to the origin and so like another one we always hear a lot, we mention, is government, right? Like M-E-N-T, ment, mental, mind, you know, mental is, and government means control, so mind control. And you see, these are things like maybe when like when you people first starting out, learning the etymology of words is definitely part of the waking process. When like you say, wait a minute, like that's fucked up. That's what that really means. You know, it's like, wait, how come I didn't know that? You know, like, and then you go and tell people and they're like, oh no, it's bullshit. But, I was like, so something that I recently found myself just checking out on Edom Online was the word ecology and then economy. Cause I was like, oh, how come they both start with the same prefix eco? And I like this part of, I'm always like thinking like if we focus more on ecology instead of economy would be, the world would be a better place if our decisions were made ecologically instead of economically. But, yeah, so I found myself looking up what the origin of those words, and basically oikos was the origin, which means living space or house or dwelling or your environment, and logi or the study of, so study of your environment, and economy is same thing, oikos. Anomy means manage. N-O-M-Y means management of your environment. So, I mean, these are just things that it kind of gets fun to look it up and try to get your head around, like, where these words come from. So, what's interesting is ecology was only coined in, like, 1873, and economy was 1530. So it took 300, or it's fairly recent where people are only starting to even think about studying the dwelling place, but much earlier we're trying to manage it, you know? So study the interactions between people living in the same environment instead of managing it. So yeah, I'll pass it back to Chris.
Word up. Word down, words all around. My mind's all scrabbled out right now. I love words. That passion, words are fun. And when you start getting into this, you start seeing all the connections and similarities. And I'm going to come back around to that. But first, I want to tell you guys a little story. I remember when my first daughter was very young, my wife was reading about teaching sign language to children. And this was one of those amazing experiences of my life, watching an infant learn to speak and learn to communicate, because the communication started happening long before the speaking came. I mean, there's all this communication happening early on with the eye contact. Just the eye contact is pretty amazing by itself and how much you get out of that. But then I remember one of the first things we were working on with her was food, you know, and you'd go like this, you know, and the first time when she was hungry and she went like this, it's like, ah, you know, we're so freaking excited. Like now this little being that we're in charge of knows how to tell us when it's hungry. That's freaking huge for survival, you know, like it's a big win. Very exciting. But that whole process of how the infant learns, you know, they're watching you, they're looking at what you're doing, and they copy what you're doing, right? And that's how a lot of times we communicate. I don't know if you've ever communicated with someone who speaks a completely different language than you, you find yourself kind of like copying them, even though you don't speak their language at all. I've tried to do it with Vietnamese or something. Like, I find myself like starting to take on their accent, and I'm like, what am I doing? But it's a natural inclination. There's a word I want to dig into. Words are exciting because they have so much in them. And when we have the drive in us to communicate with other beings, and it's a power. It's a way to leverage things in the world. If you want to make a trade with someone and you have the ability to communicate with them, then you can make the trade. If you want to make a bargain and get the better end of the deal, the better you can communicate your value or what you're offering, the better chance you have of coming up on that deal and getting a good end of it. So your words and your spells literally are magic. This is what magic, real world magic is your ability to sling, like the gunslinger, words. And the bullets are your words and your how you express them. So that excitement and fun of taking words apart, I kind of want to come back to that because I wanted to share with you one thing that I take away from studying the Bible many years ago in my Christian days. And I pull it out every once in a while because there's a few things in there that I really just love. And one of those awesome tidbits comes from 1 John. And it says, this is the New International Version. The Word became flesh. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. It's some big statements made in that. And when you really think about, what is it talking about? The Word became flesh. In the beginning was the Word. The very, very first thing is what it's saying was the utterance of the Word. So this whole God said a word, and that word created the possibility for life itself. Everything we know and understand came from that first expression. And that is magic of reality, the magic of creation that's been granted to us so that we can create, right? And so the way we use our words is crucially important in this reality because it's how we manipulate our environment. And if you think about it, like I'm saying, going back to little kids, I remember as the kids finally started getting the ability to just use the words, we used to say, use your words, because they'd want to start throwing a fit when they couldn't get their way. They're like, nah. And then we'd say, use your words. What's going on? Communicate with us what you need, you know? And when the little kid has the ability to say, I'm hungry, or, you know, eh, then they don't have to go, bah. You know, but we're living in a world of people that are still crying like babies and spitting up their vomit, not really having a control or understanding of the power of the syllables in their sentences and how each individual piece of every word is a jewel that has a history and a context. And you put them together different ways and it means different things. And there's endless exploration and treasure in all these little parts and pieces of utterances that we make that change and control the world and environment we live in. And currently that environment is one of slavery. And we're speaking slave languages inside of a slavery system. So the better we come to understand that language, because that very language is part of the main thing that's controlling us and our minds, is because that's how reality changes in this world. It's spoken into existence. The Word became flesh. The Word was God. Damn it. I'll pass it on.
Point.
You're up next, Brandon.
When we're talking about language, we're dealing with, you know, like we said, words, we're dealing with speech, we're dealing with conversation, we're dealing with communication. So we are talking about, you know, the tongue and vocal cords, because our words are vibratory pieces of energy that go out into existence. And that's why I say is we should be clear and precise with the words that we use. And I'm all a fan of shutting the fuck up. I think that's something that a lot of us need to practice and think before we speak. And really, if we don't know what to say, then just shut the fuck up. And I want to say this was one of the reasons why the initiate in the mystery schools would stay silent, because, you know, it was a means for them to just observe and learn the, you know, the correct uses of words. And by shutting the fuck up and really, you know, thinking, you know, that you can truly, you know, grasp certain concepts a little bit more deeper. But when we're talking about grammar, you know, what is grammar? Of course, you know, the etymology is going to say it is the incantation of spells, is mumbo jumbo, and it's also the principles of speaking. You know, so you have the oral, you know, how language, and you have the written language, and then you have the study of language and the study of literature and linguistics, which is philology. Of course, you have philos meaning love, and you have logos meaning the word. But grammar itself, which, you know, we talk about being the first stage of the trivium, but the grammar is something that is symbolized. And that symbol is what connects you to that thing in reality. So you can say that grammar is, or that symbol is a representation of something in reality. So every word that we have, every word that we use in all of the language is, it encrypts something, you know, it is representative of something in reality, in the objective world. Doesn't matter if it's a noun, doesn't matter if it's a verb, we are talking about something. And that's why we try to communicate these things. That's why, you know, when it comes to speech, when it comes to language, we are the only ones that we know, human beings, that are capable of it. So it shows the higher states of consciousness. It shows the higher states of awareness and the responsibility that comes along with this tool. So grammar is the inventing and the combination of symbols, because words are nothing more but symbols. You know, symbols are a representation and a decryption of things in reality. And I'm keeping it very, you know, very simple. If people want to dive deeper into what symbolism is, then I highly encourage them to check out Nate Capp's work and Brandon Martin's work, and, you know, how Douglas Martin's work, you know, because those three dudes are, you know, tremendous when it comes, you know, the symbolism, you know, so shout out to them. But the symbol is what connects you to that thing in reality. And that's why symbolism in and of itself was considered a language. And symbolism came first before we actually had the oral form, you know, because we were trying to communicate, because symbolism is a means to communicate things in reality. It's actually that median, you know, because communication is that median too, which connects you to others, which connects you to things in reality. So we have, you know, have phonetics, which is the vocal sounds. Then we have spelling. You know, you got nouns, pronouns, have preposition, verb, adverbs, conjunctions. And I'm sure now you're probably thinking like, man, I wish I had paid attention, you know, hell, in literary classes. But, you know, those things actually stand true, you know, when it came to understanding the importance of language, of literature, because we are trying to describe things. And that's what man has been doing since day one, is trying to make sense of things. So when Rick talked about, everyone having their own interpretation of words, that in and of itself is why we are in the position that we're in, with all of this confusion, all of this ignorance, all of this distortion. Because if I'm, you know, saying, well, this word means this definition toward me, and you're saying this definition means that toward you, how can we communicate? How can we harmonize? How can we come to understand? You can't. So what does it mean to understand something? That right there in and of itself is a very powerful, because the word under means beneath, among, and before. The word stand is a fascinating word. Stand means to occupy a space, to be on one's two feet, to stand firm, to be upright, to be erected. So when we look at the word stand, you're usually talking about power. You're talking about your elevation, and you're talking about something of a defensive nature. So we're talking about power. Whenever the word stand is used, you're talking, you know, about power. I mean, think about it. We have terms to say, I'm not going to stand for that. I mean, I'm going to put my, I'm going to put my feet in the ground. I'm not going to move. And then we say, well, I'm going to take a last stand in battle, you know, meaning I'm going to set up this defensive posture and I'm going to fight and try to win. And you have you can take the stand in court, you know, which is another thing, because then that gives you the power to say, or, to speak your piece per se. And then you have the pulpit stand, of course, you know, like in the church, you know, where the priest is on a higher means of elevation than you. Then you have the honey stand, you know, unfortunately, you know, people do go out and take animal life still, but they get in the stand to get that means of better perspective, to get that advantage, to get that tactical elevation. So when we're talking about, you know, being on one's two feet, you know, standing firm and being upright, being erect, we are talking about being in a position of power. If something was upright, that means it was moral. If something was upright, that means it was just. So hell, again, we're talking about words that were synonymous with morality, good, justice, and natural law. And the reason why this was so is because things that was considered higher in elevation, that pointed toward the sun, they were considered upright. They were good. They were moral. Because again, the sun was always associated with knowledge, with light, with higher states of consciousness. So when we truly understand something, we are imploring that the light, the clarity is coming in. Therefore, it gives you elevation. It puts you in a position of power to make a choice. You know, it puts you in a position of power so you can make that correct choice, hopefully the moral choice. And that's why we have, you know, have those terms, like I mentioned earlier, you know, well, you know, we have to stand, or, you know, like, I'm not going to take a stand, because, you know, usually when people use those terms, they think they are talking about the right thing, you know, but there's difference to think you're talking about the right thing and actually know what right is. So, you know, having the correct understanding of these words is so important, because without that, and I'm going to keep saying this, we will be ignorant of the objective world, we will be ignorant of ourselves, and we will be ignorant of natural law. I mean, just think about it. If someone thinks that they have, or if someone thinks they can, you know, have their own interpretation of what right is, then someone else has their own interpretation of right, then 100 people, 1,000 people, what kind of world are you going to have? The same world that we have now, a world based in moral relativism, a world based in authority, a world based in tyranny, a world based in slavery. We have to understand and stand under and hold the space on our two feet when it comes to our own knowledge, true definitive knowledge of what's right and wrong. Therefore, we can share this ground that we have planted our two feet on, not just with others, but with other beings. So, you know, whenever you're talking about stand, you're talking about a position and power. So I'll pass it on to whoever.
Yeah, cheers, Brandon. Powerful statements, man. Appreciate that. And I need to correct myself, because I was going over the ology and the study of, and then I went into like philosophy, which is, you know, the love of knowledge. You know, I was getting ahead of myself. I wanted to go into like phonology, you know, with the whole phonetics. And I promised myself I wasn't going to get cute and trying to, you know, be all, you know, playing with words a little too much. I want to be clear and, you know, for folks to understand at the best of the opportunity and possibility. So, going over the five domains of language, there is phonology, the rules of speech sounds, how phonemes are used, you know, and like think of, you know, I'm in correspondence with people in France. And those are francophones, you know. Anglophones is English, right? So, yeah, I'm sure people understand that basic understanding. And then morphology, the rules of word structure, how morphemes are used. And then we go to syntax, you know, the rules of, you know, how our structures of sentences are formed, right? And then you guys mentioned semantics, right? The rules relating to the meanings of languages, of language. And, yeah, I understand what y'all meant, you know, taking it back to etymology as far as, you know, what these things mean, right? And the mentalism. So that corresponds as well to the air elements in regards to, you know, how we are sharpening our swords and to really be wielding the sword of truth, that double-edged sword that that cuts through the bullshit, right? So, yeah, things to consider. And then, after mentalism, there's correspondence. Like, what are we doing right now? We are all in correspondence with each other. You know, that's part of, you know, communication, right? And to take it further into, you know, the as above, so below, as within, so without, like, how, what is our inner correspondence? Like, what is our inner dialogue like? How are we forming words and thinking about ourselves and that kind of stuff first and foremost? And that's going to correspond as to how we have correspondence or communication with other people, right? So these are things we've mentioned in previous discussions, and not like this is our forte per se, and that's an interesting word right there because that, you know, in French, it means strong, and what is like fort, take the E off and drop the accent, of course, you know, yep. Fort means like strong. A stronghold, rather, right? And so, yeah, it's just beautiful how these things, you know, line up when you understand, the root words of things and how they correspond between different languages. I love that shit. But what I don't love is that Orwellian double newspeak or whatever the hell that people are all caught up in, right? So, yeah, that's unfortunate. And that, you know, Chris, really cool story of, you know, like, you know, the baby language and all this stuff. And like, yeah, in the land of Babylon, where people are babbling on like babies, that kind of stuff, right? So these are just things that I've always had in the back of my mind that have motivated me to, you know, step my game up and increase my level of understanding grammar and all these things. And We bring up the Trivium so much, and it's great, you know. So every time I say the word grammar here, I'm always like, oh, yeah, Trivium and that kind of stuff. And going back to, yeah, like the S words, swords, and the air elements and that kind of stuff, and how, you know, what kind of intellectual arsenal do we have at our disposal through, you know, the intake of grammar and understanding these things and working them out with our rhetoric and refining that, right? Interesting thought that came to mind is a metaphor, if you will, taking the Trivium, you know, grammar, logic, rhetoric, or knowledge, understanding, wisdom, right? Think of a bow and arrow. At least the shaft of the bow, let's call that like the foundation, our grammar. And, I guess the string is you know, that flexes out. That's like our depth of understanding, you know, how big the bow is might be, you know, corresponding to how far back we can pull that, you know, bow, right? Or the arrow. And the arrow is our, you know, our rhetoric, our speech. And Chris, you mentioned this in another show months ago, which is why, like, I've had that in the back of my mind. Like, damn, that was, you know, on point. And so, like, are we going to be, you know, really like aiming true to our target audience, or the people that we're talking to on a daily basis? It doesn't matter what, whether you're at work or with your kids or family, relationship wise, all these things. And especially has to start with yourself first and foremost. We'll take it back to the first principle, right? So anyways,
hey, just one more thing, Derek, on your sword allegory, the way a sword is, molded, like, as I understand, you're beating the steel over and over, and then they're bending it back over itself. The more times that it's beaded and heated, and, you know, you're working it, and you were using these terms too, like working it, right? And that's kind of like the language. We've got to keep going down these trails and beating up these words and sharpening too. Process is a slow process. You're like with a whetstone going down to finer and finer grades. It's a lot of rubbing, right? Like, so you're refining as we're talking to each other and having conversations with people and practicing our rhetoric. We're refining our sword and making it sharper by practicing with it, by, you know, shaving the edges off, by keep on working it. It's not just an overnight thing. You make a sword by beating on it over a period of time and keep on, you know.
Yeah, great. I love that. A lot of images come to mind when you, I love how you can explain those things simply, Chris. Yeah, I appreciate that. I had just one or two slides I wanted to run through real quick while I'm still on the mic, if you don't mind, if you like. The good old Manly P. Hall, rest in peace. He stated once, I don't know from what lecture, apparently the reincarnation, the cycle of necessity. Words are vehicles of ideas, and unless they are understood properly, misunderstanding is inevitable. So things to consider. And yeah, abracadabra, mother lovers, you know, what are we casting out, you know, and how, you know, with the spells, right? And did we understand the proper spelling of them? And yeah, it's an interesting word, that abracadabra. Like, I will create when I speak, you know. And going back to what Brandon was saying, and I did a live stream on this, you know, if think about, you know, like these ancient temples, you know, the Buddhist temples, and did anyone really wonder why, you know, there was like complete and utter silence in these places, especially for the initiates, right? Because, yeah, it's, we got to be silent, especially, you know, with the mind chatter as well. That's one thing. But to take it to a metaphysical level, in regards to the abracadabra, apparently, you know, at these, you know, sacred sites, that have whatever certain high frequencies, or it could be more of like a pure vessel, whatever. And you can even take this back to like Hyperboreans, whatever. Like what you connect, like literally speak, can be manifested, that kind of stuff. So yeah, we need to be careful with, you know, our thought process first and foremost before anything comes out of our mouth, you know. So things to consider, just like prefix, suffix, and roots of words. You know, a prefix, you know, break down real quick. A group of letters added to the start of a root word to change its meaning or tense. The base word that, sorry, the root is the base word that gives the word its meaning. And the suffix is the ending, you know, a group of letters added to the end of a root word to change its meaning or tense. And suffix examples real quick, I mean, think of like, for instance, you know, the importance, you know, A-N-C-E, meaning an action or state, you know, or like age, a result of, you know, what is the wreckage, what is the damage, you know, what's the result of that, you know. So it's, you know, learning about these things more and more, it just helps us, you know, sharpen that sword. And out here in France, we got the Parliament, right? And I threw in a little interesting breakdown of those words, like to speak is to parler, right? Parlez-vous français? You know, y'all know that one, right? And so parler, and then mentir, it means to lie, actually. And then, yeah, of course, ment, you know, that's, you know, mind, mentalism. And the parlementaire, actually, what they have, terre means earth. So it's like they're lying to the people on earth, in a sense. Just interesting stuff. And les amis. Jerry, back to you, brother.
Thanks for sharing there, Derek. You know, once again, I got to thank technology for allowing us to communicate with each other across the world. And yeah, one thing that really had me thinking about what Brandon said was how, you know, we need knowledge because ignorance leads to chaos. And, you know, I want to tackle Rick's question. I just want to make sure I get this right. You said that people assign meaning to words, and so that's their counter argument.
Correct.
So
that words themselves don't have a meaning. The words themselves, it's hard to explain the way I'm thinking about it. They don't have a meaning. We assign a meaning to them, and this is the problem that we're running into as a society.
All right. I think I'm going to read this. Hopefully it makes sense. Since the whole point of language is communication, our goal is for the speaker, what the speaker's trying to convey, and the listener, what he listens to, they have to match up. So if we all have these different meanings, it's like, you know, we won't survive. And I want to say, let's see, you can't feed a baby a steak. So it's like if someone doesn't understand the words, it's like if we teach them natural law, they won't get it. So we have to break down the words and build them up like a baby. So that's all I have to say. I had a really good time being here. I'll pass it to you, Rick.
Yeah, it was a great chat, and got me thinking about a lot of things, and I really can't add much more than I already said or what you guys kind of said, but I would agree that I've said so many times when I talk on my show is that words are powerful, and Chris was kind of saying that they're kind of magic, and that's the way I look at it. And then when, you know, you take words and you string them together, I consider that a spell in a way. And that's kind of the way I think. I just keep telling people, like, words are so powerful. And then I also want to add that the intentions behind the words that you use have to be considered as well. I think that's a really important aspect of, you know, when you're using words and sentences. And I think your intentions behind it matters in a lot of ways. So I wanted to add that. And, you know, I just think that it's kind of interesting because I was kind of listening to a show a while back, and they were saying that the kids now coming up in school and that they're, a lot of them can't even, you know, they're getting into college and that, and they can't read barely. Some of them can't write. And I think that's the war that, you know, because I think the social engineers know the power of language and words. And if it's used in the right way and people understand the power of these words and what you can do with it, I think that's why they're kind of destroying it. And that they're making sure that people don't understand it. And then I think about technology, and I think how people are texting and they're throwing emojis around and they're shortening words. Like, I get messages from younger people, and I don't even know half the time what they're talking about. Like, they got all these short words and abbreviations, and I'm just like, what is going on? Like, it's just, to me, it's destroying words. It's destroying language. When I see that, that's the only way I can see it. Like, it's just, and I know it's quicker and they have all the excuses, but that's kind of what I think about. It's like they're doing a good job, A, changing the meaning of words right before our eyes, as I was saying earlier, and it was brought up earlier, and they're destroying language. And then now, and it's been brought up, like I brought up, people just, everybody's got a different meaning for the word, and nobody's agreeing on anything. And then that's the why, like Brandon said, we got chaos. This is why we're at, because nobody's agreeing on anything. We have to get back to agreeing on what these words mean and their intentions behind them. So that's all I can add. I mean, I'm happy I'm learning. I was thinking this too, kind of laughing to myself. I'm happy I'm learning music, because to me, in a way, I thought reading music was going to be really hard, but I find it so simple. I mean, like an eighth note is an eighth note, a 16th note is 16th notes. It's really hard to mess that up. It's kind of what it is, not like language. I mean, it's just so all over the map. So I just wanted to add that in, and I'll pass it to Jim. And thank you, guys. It was an amazing conversation.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Again, like to mention, anyone who hasn't looked into etymology, you can go to Etym Online, ETYMONLINE, Etym Online. That's a great source for looking up words. And then I'll just end on this one word, like, you can go look it up, evil. And it's got it says a bunch about it, but basically, you know, it was old English, and they spelled it Y-F-E-L. I'm not sure how they originally pronounced it, but it would be like F-L, like evil. And it meant bad or vicious or more immoral or causing harm. And basically, you know, the noun saying anything that causes injury, anything that harms or is likely to harm, right? Conduct contrary to standards of morals or righteousness. That's evil. But getting back into confusion and distortion, we all think we're led to believe that evil is like Hitler or like Dr. Evil or like a serial killer. Like, it can't be us that are evil. Like, but it's like, if you're contributing to harm, you know, say by supporting and contributing like money towards war, well, guess what? That's evil. So there's another word that, gets, you know, misused. So chances are you are evil. You don't want to admit it. So there's a good way of looking up the origin of a word and saying, oh yeah, maybe I am that. So anyway, thanks guys. Thank you for the talk.
Yeah. Can I just say something real quick?
I think you get a triple letter score for that word.
Yeah, man.
Like four.
Jim, you mentioned the original word of evil is YFL, kind of spelled like that. EFL?
YFL, that old English.
I mean, that reminds me of, you know, phonetically, like Eiffel Tower out here in France, right? Interesting things, you know, and it actually does have, like, you know, the eye of Sauron kind of circling around 360 degrees around the city. Yeah. You've been there before, you know what I mean. And just to touch real quick, and this needs to be emphasized just a little bit more, I feel. Rick, you brought up the great point of like the whole oversaturation of emojis and how things have just been watered down through text messages, and like it seems like we lost a more pure interconnectedness with ourselves in this, you know, digital age and social media and all this stuff, because through text and emojis, we're not seeing people's body language. That's another thing that needs to be emphasized a little bit more. Like, we're talking about language, right? But what about, how are we expressing ourselves and all this stuff? You know, it ain't got to be all like, woo, Italiano, so whatever the hell, and like all these influencers and NLP idiots, whatever the hell. Like, sorry, but not really. But yeah, there's like, you know, tonality of the voice and your cadence and all this stuff. So things to consider. And thanks so much for listening. Thank you all for contributing some great points, gentlemen.
Yeah, intonation, isn't that another word?
Yeah.
Intonation, yeah.
Go ahead, Brandon.
Chris, can I pick up on Derek's and Rick's point real quick, and then you can wrap it up? Because I was going to talk about that. Is, you know, we have the oral form of language, then we have the written form. The written form is where you can easily create distortions and confusions. You know, we've seen this, you know, with the early form of the church, and we see this a lot in the propaganda and the changing of books. And the problem with the written form is you don't get to see the expression. You know, it doesn't really showcase a lot of clarity. It doesn't really showcase a lot of context. It doesn't showcase a lot of framework. It doesn't really showcase the allegorical nature. It may not showcase, you know, the metaphorical nature. It may not even showcase the symbolic or the figurative nature of what's trying to be stated. It usually shows the literal sense. And that's why, you know, like when people will read things, they'll take it so literally. So whenever we are dealing with, you know, groups or, you know, getting involved with the written form, we have to be conscious that a lot of context gets left out. And the word context at etymology just means to weave together. So if the context is being left out, then there's a lot of things that aren't being weaved together, and then that leads to more distortions, semantical, you know, misunderstandings, and just more ignorance. So we have to be self-conscious. We have to be hell aware that whenever we're dealing with the written form of language, there's a lot that could be possibly being left out. And that's why, you know, it's so easy to, you know what they say, rewrite history, because when you're writing things down, you can easily change things at the stroke of the pen. And that's why, you know, they have the old saying is the pen is mightier than the sword, because you can just change stuff on paper that make people believe it. So I'll end with that.
That's a great point.
Were you talking about history or his story? That's the way the story goes, or so they say. There's all these freaking catchphrases. We got to kind of watch out for those because they catch us, you know, in cul-de-sacs, right? Because people like to just say them over and over, a lot of these things, without really thinking about the meaning. But, oh, I got a little white hair right here, and every time I pull my beard, like, old guy stories come out. So I'm just remembering this story about these Indian guys. I think it was 4 or 5 blind Indian guys, and they're set around an elephant, and they're supposed to figure out what this thing is, and they're all feeling different parts of the elephant, and they're all describing it from their own point of view. It's like, I feel this massive, big, thick thing, right? And the other guy's like, well, I feel this tiny little hairy thing, you know? So I made this, I had AI help me make this slide. Are we talking trunks or tails? And, you know, you see the one guy on the one side, he's looking at the trunk of the elephant, and he's saying, yeah, it's long and thick. And then you see the other guy at the other end looking at the tail. He says, nah, it's short and thin. So I think this is an important story, allegory to have in your mind. When you go out in the world, we're working, like we said, we're pounding on our swords. We're trying to build our rhetoric. We're talking to people. So often, more than not, we're both talking about the same thing. We're using the same word, but we have two different ideas in our mind. Mm-hmm. And so when you start to understand and recognize how that works, you can start to discern. And so I think it's really important when communicating with people is to try to get out of them, what do you mean when you're using that word? Because most people don't take the time, like we're describing, to really dig into words, right? So the better you get at it, the better you can help other people. And here's one way I want to share with you that I think is really fun. This is something my dad taught me. Words are kind of modular. Like, you were sharing this, Derek, where there's the suffix and the prefix, and then there's the center. A lot of times you can find similar ones. Here's an easy one. C-O. Cooperate. Coordinate. Words with co means with or together.
Yep.
So, you know, you can just go around, think about hundreds of words that have co in them, and then think to yourself, with, together. Oh, yeah, it always kind of works, right? And then operate. What other words have operate in it? Oh, operation, opera. Sometimes they don't work. Sometimes, oh, I come up with opera. I wonder, does that have to do with operate? And just let your mind, you know, take these words apart into little pieces and start, what other word has that piece in it? Inspection, peck, inspect, detect. You know, like, the more you start doing this, the more you start seeing the similarities. I've had times where someone gives me a word I've never even heard before. I take apart the pieces in my mind, compare them to other words, and I'm able to come up with a full definition without ever even looking it up. A word I had no clue what it was about by doing this process. And it's actually quite fun. And then once you start doing it, you start noticing it in all these words that are similar and words that have these different pieces and parts in them. And if you get this excitement, enthusiasm for words and vocabulary and sharpening your sword, then you have the ability to really communicate with people better and understand what they're trying to say, help them define what they're trying to say. Oftentimes I'm giving people words. They're like, and I'm like, do you mean this word? You know? And the more you spend time on a dictionary, and these days you go on ChatGPT for free and you say, ChatGPT, here's the word. Please give me 4 different definitions and 3 different dictionaries etymologies. Bup, there it is for you. Just like that. You don't even have to go to the library anymore. You don't even, you know, so. You know, a lot of the disagreements people are having out there are pre-programmed in there. That's the last thing I wanted to point out, that these words and phrases that are being tossed around out in the world are created by, they create these compound words. They put things together like the new normal, right? And it becomes mm-hmm. something that gets in people's heads and it psychologically damages people. So I just thought of a few questions. Ask yourself, what good are you doing with words? What good do words do you? What good are your words doing others? You know, do your words serve truth? So it's asking you really, what spell are you under? Because if your words aren't doing good for others, and if your words aren't doing good for humanity and for truth, if your words don't serve truth, then you're under a fucking spell and you need to get out of it. And the way you get out of it is by learning how the spell is spelled. Learn how to take the spell apart. Learn the pieces and the parts and what constitutes it. And it can no longer enslave you because you understand how it works. And it no longer controls you because you now know it. And you have the power. And the words are that power. And understanding how to use them and how to put them together and take them apart is a power that no evil can really ever do anything about because it unveils truth. The greatest warrior in all of time and history, you know, truth itself cannot be defeated. So that's your sword, and the words are your way to chip away at that. So I really appreciate you guys listening and sharing your words in the chat, which I hope you've been doing. And we'll look forward to seeing you next time with the One Great Work Warriors. Have a good night.